A roadmap for reopening. The new guidelines on what summer and fall might look like in Canada. The vaccination targets that could mean fewer rules in the coming months.
But in Toronto, any widespread return to normal will need to wait. Once again, the city pulling the plug on major public events until at least Labor Day. Good evening. The glimpse into life after lockdown is the first indicator of what restrictions might be relaxed.
And it relies entirely on this country meeting its vaccine targets. The information is compiled by the Public Health Agency of Canada. If 75% of all eligible Canadians have one dose and 20% have both, this summer could include activities like camping, hiking, picnics, and patios. And a further easing of measures could be seen come fall.
But the advice for now is to stay the course. CTV's Mirella Fernandez reports.
Canadians can have some fun this summer. Public health officials released guidelines today saying if 75% of eligible Canadians have a first shot and 20% have a second dose, this summer, Canadians can go camping, hiking, have a picnic, and sit on patios.
This is a roadmap for Canadians. This gives Canadians a vision of what it looks like as we proceed down this vaccination path together.
About 50% of eligible Canadians will have received a first dose by the end of the week. But the guidelines released today are cautious because several provinces are still in rough shape.
In many parts of the country, we're still in the battling the third wave, right? And so the case counts are high. The healthcare systems in certain parts of the country are still sort of close to the breaking point.
Federal health officials also looked ahead to the fall, saying if 75% of eligible Canadians have received two doses and daily case counts remain low, Canadians can play indoor sports, attend college and university classes, and have family gatherings.
To get to this better summer and fall, we need to keep doing everything we can to protect ourselves and our communities, ease the pressure on the health system, and help bring an end to this pandemic.
These are national guidelines, but it will be up to provincial and territorial leaders to decide what actually rolls out. And because the third wave is playing out so differently across the country, expect different regional restrictions. Mirella Fernandez, CTV News, Toronto.
Here in Ontario, Doug Ford says a two-dose summer is possible.
The province giving us an indication of how many shots would be required. But first, here are the newest numbers. The Ministry of Health says nearly 142,000 doses were administered yesterday, and more than 6.7 million shots have been given out since the start of the rollout. More than 415,000 people in Ontario are considered vaccinated, having received both required doses.
CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
I'm Nathan. Premier Doug Ford says his target is to have all eligible Ontarians fully vaccinated by September 22nd, the end of summer. In order to do that, the government says they're going to need 11 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. With more than half of Ontario's adult population now partially inoculated, Premier Doug Ford is setting his sights on second shots.
We get the supply, we will work our backs off to have a two-dose summer instead of a one-dose summer.
But is that two-dose summer a pipe dream or a realistic goal? A member of the province's vaccine task force is uncertain.
It's really hard, in all fairness, to look anyone in the eye and tell anyone with any degree of certainty when X number of people will be vaccinated.
Over the next 6 weeks, Ontario is expecting to receive 6.2 million doses of Pfizer alone and has 5.6 million people left to inoculate with the initial shot. Now the government says it'll need millions more to make this a two-dose summer.
And that would mean another 11 million vaccines on top of the supply we know we're getting up until June, and that's assuming there's no supply disruptions, 11 million more vaccinations to get everyone in Ontario 12 and over, which includes our children as well, 12 and over, two doses. We would need 11 million additional vaccines.
In order to do that, the government says it'll try to boost its vaccine output with around-the-clock vaccinations in some cases and more shots in pharmacies. And the province is waiting for the supply to ramp up before shortening the timeline between shots.
I think it's pretty reasonable to suggest that many people will be getting a second dose throughout the summer, and we could shorten the 4 months to, a little bit less than 4 months in some people. But again, like, I find it very difficult to have significant degrees of certainty with that.
In the meantime, the Ford government is being urged to reopen outdoor recreational amenities.
We know that just by being outside, that is such a major risk mitigation where it's vanishingly small of risk of transmission. It's safe and it's going to help things like physical and mental health.
The NDP says it will force a vote inside the Ontario legislature to reopen those spaces.
It's been frustrating and the lockdowns are having devastating impacts on our mental health and well-being.
Regardless of the results, the government has signaled it will stay the course until June 2nd. And the premier says regardless of vaccinations, those outdoor amenities can start to open as early as June 2nd. And the economic recovery could begin right after that, with the locks coming off of the economy sometime over the month of June. He's aiming for a more normalized July and August this year. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Ontario's positivity rate is now sitting just above 6%, with roughly 44,000 tests processed in the last 24 hours. Public Health Ontario is logging 2,362 new cases in its most recent update. That brings the province's total to more than 504,000 over the course of the pandemic. 26 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 8,431. And more than 468,000 cases are now considered resolved.
The regional breakdown looks like this, with 691 new cases in the city of Toronto and 563 in Peel Region. There are 224 new cases in York Region, 148 in Durham, and 112 in Hamilton. Halton Region logged 63 new cases, with 50 in Niagara.
Public health experts say those case numbers remain too high, and in Toronto, a sweeping measure reminding us of our COVID reality.
The city moving to cancel another summer's worth of large events, including the CNE. CTV's Austin Delaney is live with more. Austin.
Well, the CNE says canceling the X last summer was hard, but it was able to get by. Canceling it 2 years in a row, well, it threatens the very existence of the 146-year tradition.
Let's go. Here we go.
The barkers barking, the players playing. But the always pulsating midway of the X silenced again this year, as the CNE is one of several big crowd events canceled due to COVID safety concerns.
Yeah, I think they may have jumped the gun a little bit.
The head of the Canadian Association of Amusement Operators says the X could have worked on a smaller scale.
If they couldn't have the fair the way it traditionally is, with all the pavilions and the indoor markets and so on, that maybe they would just be able to operate simply outdoors.
But the canceled events like the Toronto Caribbean Carnival, Beaches Jazz Fest, the Roar by the Lakeshore, Toronto Indie, and Taste of the Danforth all attract huge crowds.
It's pretty devastating for the businesses, our members in particular. I mean, many of them rely on this weekend. We have had upwards of 1.6 million people attend our festival.
It is the right move.
CTV's infectious disease specialist, Dr. Abdul Shakawi, says just too many people in one place to be safe.
Outdoor transmission is extremely low, but it's not zero. And once we start changing things with respect to the density of people in crowds, the risk goes from exceedingly low to maybe not so negligible.
The CNE says it will need $11 million in government help, or this 146-year tradition will end.
This amounts to an over $70 million revenue loss cumulatively, and the economic impact loss to the province is $256 million over the 2 years.
Aw, it's sad. I haven't missed one year other than last year of the CNE.
Mayor Tory says a decision had to be made sooner rather than later.
The organizers need to have the notice from us. I mean, it's one of those things where some of them are, in fact, telling us that they're going to cancel the event. We have to issue them permits, and they have to sign contracts for different kinds of things. And so it becomes a kind of an ongoing discussion we have as to how long we can leave it.
From the Toronto Caribbean Carnival, we understand that safety comes first and respect the decision that the city has taken. As much as we would like to have the event, safety comes first. We will be pivoting to virtual events. And from the Toronto Indie, to have that void for a second straight year is heartbreaking. We deeply miss our fans there and urge them to remain safe during these unprecedented times. IndyCar looks forward to a high-powered return in 2022 and for years to come.
And the job losses at the CNE alone are staggering. 5,000 jobs that usually go to young students who need that money for the fall school year. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. And our online team has a full list of the affected events this summer. You can find those details at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Well, this is a gorgeous night in southern Ontario with warm temperatures tempting many people to go outside. This span of nice weather coming as the province's stay-at-home order is extended. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live at Woodbine Beach with more. Scott.
Nathan, we've seen lots of people out here today, even right now, early evening. Lots of people out for a run, riding their bikes, families out for a walk. That is all allowed under the stay-at-home order. There are also large groups of friends gathered here and at least half a dozen volleyball games happening on the beach right now. That's not really allowed under the stay-at-home order. And whether you agree with it or not, and many medical experts disagree with not allowing people to gather outside, police say it is still the law and it will be enforced.
It was a beautiful day to get outside, and that's exactly what thousands of Torontonians did.
Keeping my distance and just enjoying the sun.
At Woodbine Beach, some came for the physical fitness.
I just think it's honestly like a way for me to get exercise.
Others for their mental well-being.
For me, mental health is extremely, extremely important, especially right now when we've been locked down multiple times.
The Ontario government has extended the province's stay-at-home order until June 2nd, something that many may find increasingly hard to do as the weather improves.
I don't think staying at home is something that is going to make people stay at home more. It's just not realistic.
The vast majority of medical experts have called for the reopening of outdoor activities.
We know that the risk of outdoor transmission is negligible. Like, it's negligible. If you and I were calling the shots, I think we'd open up outdoors and not just say outdoors is safe. I'd be encouraging people to be outside.
But the order banning outdoor gatherings remains in place, and Toronto police say is being enforced.
People are being held accountable. Like, you got to know that if you're out gathering somewhere and the police come upon you, one out of two of you right now are probably going to get a ticket for what's happening there.
Many here say they're doing what they can.
It may not be ideal, but at the end of the day, you just make the best of it.
It is what it is. And you know, if you think you're hard done by, just change the channel and see what's going on in other parts of the world, which won't end with COVID.
And after a long winter of living under strict COVID conditions,
it's hard to see the finish line when it just doesn't, it keeps continuing.
Some are just looking for the light at the end of lockdown.
And Toronto police say their dedicated teams will be out this weekend and they will be proactively patrolling areas where they know large groups of people tend to gather. Police say over the last week they have given out more than 400 tickets. That's actually led to 11 criminal charges, each of those tickets worth $750 each. Reporting live at Woodbine Beach, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great weekend. Well, it sure is the kind of weather that draws people outdoors, especially after several rainy weeks. Lindsay Morrison is here. Lindsay, how about these Friday night conditions?
It is a fabulous Friday, and we have lots to look forward to when it comes to the weekend as well. Here's the current satellite and radar. A dome of high pressure over southern Ontario means mainly clear skies, and winds have been coming out of the south today. These are the wind speeds, around 20 kilometers per hour here in Toronto. As a result, it is very mild around the Golden Horseshoe. Worth pointing out that it's slightly cooler for lakeside communities like Ajax at 14 degrees right now, 16 in Oakville. As we make our way through the night tonight, we're eventually going to drop to a seasonal low of 9 degrees. Over the weekend, chance of a pop-up shower. I'll show you when coming up. But for now, Nathan, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay. Just ahead, are some GTA municipalities targeting people's wallets to prevent big crowds? The new parking rules taking effect. It's a big number, more than 80,000 tickets in just 3 months sent to drivers caught speeding on Toronto streets.
Nabbed by automated enforcement cameras, now being moved to other problem areas. CTV's John Musselman joins us live with more. John.
Well, Michelle, the mayor made it clear today when these numbers came out that it's a wake-up call to people that need to slow down in community zones like the street I'm on right now. The speeding drivers were captured by the city's 50 automated speed enforcement cameras, and one of the worst spots was here near Shepherd Avenue, just west of Don Mills. In January, 6,600 tickets were issued. Almost 2,500 were repeat offenders. In the first 3 months of the year, the city says it issued 81,557 tickets. The cameras are located in all four corners of the city. Sites selected are usually near schools and libraries, like here on Van Horn and Bryan Drive in North York.
Yeah, there's a lot of cars that go fast. There's a lot of kids around, so it can be dangerous.
I think it's a good idea.
Why?
Eventually people will learn, understand, get a couple tickets in the mail.
I think they're money grabs.
And I think that if they want to reduce the traffic, they should put those humps, because that makes people slow down more than having those things there.
Back on Sheppard Avenue, the speed limit has been reduced to 50 kilometers an hour. The city says the cameras help promote road safety and reduce speeding in residential areas. These residents live near a camera positioned on Lawrence Avenue in Scarborough.
But yeah, some people driving like 80 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Very speed. Mostly I seen like evening time. This is disgusting.
There's a camera there, so you have to slow down, you know.
The automated cameras are repositioned throughout the year. And here on Van Horn, the posted speed limit is 40 kilometers an hour, and we've been here most of the afternoon, and for the most part, people seem to be respecting that speed limit. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thanks, John. And you can see a full list of the 50 camera locations on our website. Multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has those details at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
In just a few minutes, continued concern about AstraZeneca shots and a look at Ottawa's guidelines for Canada's reopening. We'll have those details coming up in Overview with Evan Solomon.
Several years after his jail cell death, the family of Suleiman Fakhiri says its search for answers will not stop.
The case set to be the focus of an inquest, but loved ones argue more can be done now. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
And the government needs to take the courage, the honor, and the respect just for all Ontarians.
It's been 4.5 years since 30-year-old Suleiman Fakhiri died inside a Lindsay, Ontario correctional facility. His family says time has not brought them closure or closer to justice.
To this day, they have not issued an apology to my mother, a woman who had to bury her own child. My brother died under their care.
Fakhiri suffered from schizophrenia and died in a segregation cell. His family alleges he was beaten while awaiting a transfer to hospital. Yesterday, the NDP raised the case in the legislature, saying the government is sitting on their Correctional Services Oversight Report regarding Fakhiri's death.
Will the Solicitor General do the right thing? Make this report public and take a step closer towards justice for Mr. Fakhiri's family.
The example that the member shared is very disturbing for many of us. So when we formed government, when we had the opportunity to actually make some investments in corrections, we did that decisively and we did it quickly.
The Solicitor General did not answer the NDP's question on making the report public.
And the minister that was not able to even utter my brother's name. I mean, it just was a profoundly difficult, painful exchange.
When asked about the report, both the offices of the Solicitor General and Attorney General told CTV News it would be inappropriate to comment further, as a coroner's inquest is planned, but has yet to be scheduled. Fakhiri's brother wants the report made public and see charges in the case. Some involved were fired. Last year, the OPP decided not to lay charges.
People with mental illness need to be treated better. They should not be given to their families in a body bag. And it seems like my brother's life was viewed as cheap because he had a mental illness.
Releasing the report, he says, is a step towards making things right. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Turning next to the fallout from military reports alleging horrifying conditions at some Toronto long-term care homes amid the first wave of COVID-19.
Claims of residents dying from dehydration, and now documents are raising questions about what the province knew and when. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
Days after a damning report from the Canadian military was made public that claimed the 26 residents of the Downsview long-term care home died due to dehydration last spring before the forces stepped in to stem a COVID-19 outbreak.
There was a devastating situation in a number of our long-term care homes.
Ontario's long-term care minister said her government was still trying to confirm the facts behind the allegations of death by dehydration.
We're trying to piece this together as to what really happened. And verify information.
But CTV News has learned that the ministry's own internal inspectors had flagged that very issue of potential neglect within that LTC last spring in reports conducted in May 2020 and publicly posted that June. At that time, 9 non-compliance orders were issued. The ministry's inspectors writing, staff identified concerns related to nutrition and hydration in the home that posed a safety risk to residents, and that a doctor had observed that residents were not being fed appropriately or receiving sufficient fluids.
People say certain things, and we have to understand what the basis for that is.
The inspector also noted last spring that staff had reported that residents were not receiving the appropriate diets, and that in the case of several patients requiring hydration, their fluid administration bags were empty. The minister today acknowledged that she knew that some assessments had happened during the peak of the crisis there last spring.
There were inspections and investigations done at the time when this was unfolding.
A spokesperson for Marilee Fullerton said that the recent release of the LTC Care Commission's report was the first the minister had heard of the allegations of fatal dehydration, and that the ministry has ordered more inspections of the home. Those checks are now ongoing, a year after the ministry's own team ordered the operators to appropriately administer food and fluids to its very vulnerable residents. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
Is it an attempt to keep out-of-towners away? Ajax is the latest town to impose a price on parking along the waterfront.
But only non-residents will need to pay. As CTV's Mike Walker reports, similar ideas have also caught the attention of other places.
Plenty of room to enjoy and park at the Ajax waterfront today, but residents say overcrowding was a big problem here last summer.
It was just jam-packed down here, like every weekend. It was just nobody was distancing.
Something the town wants to rectify this year, specifically with parking. Starting tomorrow, non-residents will have to pay $20 for parking on weekends and holidays or face a $60 fine.
And what was happening last summer is that streets were completely jam-packed with vehicles. Emergency vehicles couldn't get through.
It will be enforced until in September with designated parking spots at the waterfront. Ajax residents can park for free, but will have to register their license plates on the town's website.
We're trying to ensure that the waterfront is accessible to all Ajax residents. If it means that the $20 parking fees may deter other groups from coming in, then it will open up space through that process.
Other municipalities taking it a step further to discourage out-of-towners from visiting its beaches this summer in order to control the spread of COVID-19.
Certainly know that it doesn't have legs of its on its own. It has to travel with people. Part of that is trying to discourage mobility.
On the shores of Lake Simcoe at Innisfil Beach Park, parking and use of the boat launch will once again be limited to local residents. Town staff will control entry.
I know that fresh air and exercise are important to all of us, but we need to do that in our own communities right now.
And in Oakville, parking has been banned on streets near beaches and waterfront parks. Parking fines increased to $100, measures some people believe are necessary amid the third wave.
Minimizing individuals from coming into here who may not be vaccinated or may have COVID.
In Ajax,
I hope that it brings a little more semblance of less crowds.
But others visiting the waterfront say it's too harsh.
We'd be walking and Pickering, I think.
Officials say the new measures and restrictions will be revisited as the province emerges from the pandemic. Mike Walker, CTV News.
The latest data suggests the barring of flights from India and Pakistan is making a difference. Direct flights from both countries were halted for 30 days starting on April 22nd. In the 2 weeks after that, the number of planes landing in Canada carrying passengers with COVID-19 was cut by more than half. Between April 24th and May 7th, the total number fell to 56 flights. That included about 20 from the U.S. and Europe.
Overseas, Israel launched its biggest offensive yet today as the conflict with Palestinian militants rages on. Israeli aircraft targeted a Gaza Strip bank it says was affiliated with Hamas. Palestinian medical officials report at least 126 people have been killed since Monday, including 31 children and 20 women. They also say 11 people have died in clashes in the West Bank. Israel insists its attacks are an effort to halt rocket attacks. It says more than 2,000 have been fired since the start of the conflict. Authorities say 8 people have been killed in Israel.
This proved to be yet another eventful week amid the pandemic. Life isn't changing for Ontarians, at least not until June, while more and more of us are getting our shots. But AstraZeneca is now out of the mix as far as first doses go. It's time for Overview with Evan Solomon. Evan, what to do about AZ in this country?
There's so much Astra anxiety, and basically this week AstraZeneca got benched not only in Ontario as a first dose, but benched across the country for reasons of safety and reasons of supply. Confusion reigns around if it's safe. It's not one of the preferred vaccines, according to officials. So should you take it? Should you not? We've now got 655,000 new doses in the country. Ontario next week will have 250,000. What are we going to do with them? Should people get their second dose? If people want their second dose, should they take them? If someone wants it as a first dose? Well, into this confusion, this weekend on CTV's Question Period, I will be speaking to Sir John Bell. Who's he? Well, he's the guy that happened to have overseen the development of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. He's in London. By the way, he's a Canadian. And he said AstraZeneca pulled the UK out of this. He says Canadian health officials are not really looking at the data on this. He said that they're relying on what he says is hearsay. He said, given the fact that the Indian variant is out there, that there's a third wave and it's very deadly, he thinks Canadian officials are basically making the wrong decision to bench AstraZeneca right now, that the rewards still way outweigh the risks. And he really tears a strip off that. And he also has a very stark warning that the early data, which is being done at Oxford, where he is, says the early data on mixing and matching one vaccine of AstraZeneca and then one on Pfizer, he said, doesn't look very good. And he says, I wouldn't recommend it at this point. So really interesting.
That is. And it's very interesting this week to see Americans learn they don't need to wear masks if vaccinated while we are just status quo Groundhog Day. What do you make of what officials say our summer could be?
Yeah, Health Canada released the guidelines, 75% one dose, 20% two doses. And everyone thought, OK, this is the great one dose summer. What do we get with that? Bupkas. It turns out that a one dose summer has the very same restrictions as last summer. A zero-dose summer. Talk about getting your hope balloon deflated. The question now will be, will provinces follow those guidelines? And the answer is probably not. I think provinces are going to look at their own profiles, their own stats on second doses. They'll look at what they're saying in the United States, and they're going to make their own decisions on how quickly they can move. But boy, were those guidelines today from Health Canada a bit of a summertime letdown.
Evan, thank you. And a reminder to join him on Sunday for CTV's Question Period and weeknights for Power Play on CTV News Channel.
Coming up, how a Scarborough nursing home has become an example of how to dispel vaccine hesitancy.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the pandemic has changed the way we do many things, and that includes how we access our libraries. So lockdowns haven't stopped people from using the Toronto library system. In fact, it broke a record for the most downloads in the world. How many? I'll have that story just ahead.
Today we made it to a high of 21 degrees in the city of Toronto. It's not record heat. We would have had to make it to about 30 degrees in order for that to be the case. But we are on the warm side of seasonal. Interestingly enough, though, this was not our warmest day of the year so far. That title belongs to the 25th day of March. If you can believe it, we reached 21.5 degrees that day. But it looks as though we have more warmth in the forecast as we make our way into next week. High pressure for the most part this weekend, but a little bit of instability means a chance of a pop-up shower or even a thunder shower. We'll talk about your weekend forecast and the rest of your 7 day after this break here on CTV News.
Here's an interesting fact about Toronto you may not know. Our city's library system has the highest digital circulation in the world.
The number of downloads of e-books and audiobooks jumping more than 30% last year to a new record of 8 million. Pat Foran has our story tonight on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, the library is a great resource at the best of times, but during the pandemic, it's been vital to help people in self-isolation. While you can still get physical books with curbside pickup, more people are reading and listening to books in a digital format.
The Toronto Public Library System has 100 branches, and while they're normally an excellent place to browse physical books and other resources, most have had to close at various points throughout the pandemic. The library has had to pivot and make more content available online, which has been fantastic for avid readers like Christine Chong.
With the pandemic, and because I'm home all the time due to all the lockdowns and restrictions, I've been definitely taking out library books a lot more, specifically ebooks.
Chong bought an e-reader and signed up online with the library and has enjoyed the many services it has to offer.
As much as I love having a physical book and love being able to hold a book and turn the pages, like electronic book option is really wonderful.
The online library has set a new record of 8 million digital downloads of ebooks and audiobooks.
Toronto Public Library is actually, for the eighth year in a row, the largest consumer of e-content in the world.
Sean Mitchell says even if you don't currently have a library card, as long as you're a resident of Toronto, you can register for a digital access card. Once you have that, not only can you download ebooks and audiobooks for free, but also watch movies and listen to music. You can do online research and read magazines and newspapers. The Canopy streaming service has over 30,000 movies and documentaries you can also watch for free. If you do want to have a physical item, the library does provide curbside pickup.
So customers are able to go online, place a hold, and they go to their local branch and pick it up. It's contactless pickup.
The online library is a wonderful resource to help people get through the pandemic. Chong says for her, it's been a great benefit.
If there's one really great thing about this year is that it really helped me reignite my love of reading and reading just like tons of different types of books.
And no matter where you live, you can check with your municipality to see what services are being offered by your library system. They may also have curbside pickup as well as ebooks, audiobooks, and other digital services. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
We almost had the warmest day of the year so far. We got close. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. May's feeling a lot like summer already, you know. And Pat just gave us a great idea there. Sit outside, read a book. If my kids would let me alone, that's what I'd be doing this weekend for sure.
That sounds like a real nice way to spend the weekend, Michelle. I'm going to take some notes here. And you know what? Even though it didn't end up being our warmest day of the year so far, this is the first time between yesterday and today that we have had two consecutive 20-degree days. Hasn't happened yet. And guess what? There's plenty more where that came from. By the middle part of next week, we could experience daytime highs in the mid-20s. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. And we're not the only ones here in Canada experiencing a little bit of a warm-up. This is our upper air pattern. Over the next couple of days, in the interior of BC, parts of southern Saskatchewan and southern Manitoba, the temperature could climb to about 30 degrees. We're not exactly forecasting that here in southern Ontario, but this does indicate some milder air headed our way. Starting overnight tonight, this is a seasonal low of 9 degrees. First time we've been able to say that in a while, especially when it comes to the overnight. And then tomorrow's forecast daytime high, very similar to today's, 21 degrees. The difference tomorrow is that there will be a little more in the way of cloud cover, and we have about a 30% chance of a pop-up shower. And that's just because there's a little bit of instability in the atmosphere, a little bit of humidity starting to make its way toward us here in the lower Great Lakes. We'll feel it more so into the early part of next week. But for spending some time around home, maybe enjoying that book outside, as Michelle suggested, it's going to be a pretty good day. Just keep an eye on the sky in case a couple of clouds or showers do in fact develop. Here's our current satellite and radar. For the most part, high pressure is going to remain strong. It's as we make our way into tomorrow afternoon and then the early part of the evening that some areas could experience some wet weather. It's not going to happen everywhere. Into the day on Sunday, it's extreme southwest Ontario that we'll keep an eye on for the possibility of showers. We should be able to enjoy a dry day. And really, this seven-day forecast is pretty dry. I think by this time next week, we're suddenly going to be talking about how little rainfall we've had so far in the month of May. But let's enjoy this while we can. Highs of around 22 degrees for Monday, 24 on Tuesday. Wednesday looks like the warm one with a forecast daytime high of 25. I've got my eye on next Friday as we make our way toward the May long weekend. Looks like we've got some rain in the forecast. We'll see if that holds. That's the weather for now. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And coming up, the NHL asking Ottawa for clarity about cross-border rules ahead of the postseason. What it could mean as hockey fans wait for the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's seen as a vaccination success story, a Scarborough nursing home where more than 90% of its staff have received both their shots.
Its executive director using a personal approach to dispel hesitancy. CTV's Janice Golding has more.
In late December, the Wexford residence on Lawrence near Pharmacy was one of the first long-term care homes in Ontario to be offered vaccines for its staff members.
I quickly decided I would call all the staff personally and ask them what
they wanted to do.
CEO Sandy Bassett had learned Michael Guerin Hospital was even willing to send buses to bring her staff to a vaccine clinic, so she jumped into action. Over one weekend, she called all 120 employees.
We only had a few days to get these buses filled. And they only scheduled the subsequent buses once you could show that you had staff to come and get vaccinated.
At the time, COVID-19 vaccines were very new, and some expressed doubts.
I was a little hesitant, yeah. Yeah, it's, the vaccine just came out rather quickly.
It seemed a little bit fast to get on the market.
However, Bassett said she knew if she could fill the 30 original slots they were offered, more would follow.
As soon as I was asked, it kind of felt like a weight was taken off my shoulders.
Graham Longland was the very first staff member to get a shot.
I still had an hour left in my shift when I got back, so went right back to work, and people, I think, were happy to see that it was nothing.
And others quickly followed his lead. By January, three-quarters of the Wexford staff had their first shots, while Bassett and the medical team worked to reassure those still on the fence.
I remember that when I heard there was the last bus was going to go, I decided, well, I'm going to get on that bus.
I tried to be rational and support them and tell them, as soon as you're ready, let me know. We'll find a place where you can get vaccinated.
Paula Rock Cooper says she finally decided she would get her first shot last month.
But the day of, I was sure I was ready.
While Bassett says she doesn't think she'll be able to convince everyone to get vaccinated, as of this afternoon, 90% of her staff has had both doses. Janice Golding, CTV News.
COVID-19 is causing problems for the NHL with the playoffs about to begin. ESPN reports the league is asking the Trudeau government for a decision by June 1st about American teams crossing the border during the postseason. Toronto and the other Canadian clubs only played each other in the regular season. But what happens during the semifinals and finals? The Canadian team that advances from the North Division will have to play U.S. opponents. Right now, American teams can't play in Canada without mandatory quarantines. That would make travel for home and away games impossible.
It's a fitting tribute to the legacy of one of the all-time greats. Toronto's first accessible baseball diamond will be named after the late Blue Jays pitcher Roy Halladay. The announcement was made on what would have been the Hall of Famer's 44th birthday. During Halladay's time here, he established Doc's Box. It allowed children and families at Sick Kids Hospital to attend Jays games. The new field will be at Highview Park near Kingston and Birchmount in Scarborough. It's going to be a safe space for athletes of all abilities to learn and develop important life skills through baseball. Roy Halladay Field is expected to be completed this summer.
John Legend will headline a nationally televised event marking the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. To believe that you're out there. The Grammy Award-winning singer will perform at the Remember and Rise event on May 31st at One Oak Field. It will include other yet-to-be-announced speakers and performers. The event is being organized by a commission created to educate people about the attack. In 1921, a white mob killed an estimated 300 people in a predominantly African-American neighborhood of Tulsa.
Prince Harry says it was like living in a zoo. That's how he described his royal experience during a podcast. The Duke of Sussex revealed that he didn't want the job, especially after how it affected his mother, the late Princess Diana. Harry also didn't want his wife and son to have to deal with the spotlight the way she had to. The prince considered quitting several times when he was in his 20s, but he says he feels more liberated now after he and his family moved to California.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Time to settle in for the weekend. We've got some great TV ready for you. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
The roadmap for Canadians. This gives Canadians a vision of what it looks like as we proceed down this vaccination path together.
Updating our top stories, federal health officials laid out their plan for what life could look like once most Canadians are vaccinated against COVID-19. The country's top doctor says Canadians should be able to enjoy an outdoor summer.
It's really hard, in all fairness, to look anyone in the eye and tell anyone with any degree of certainty when X number of people will be vaccinated.
Vaccine supply could create difficulties for Doug Ford to achieve his goal of a two-dose summer. It comes as the province continues to face criticism for keeping certain outdoor activities closed as part of its stay-at-home order.
Outdoor transmission is extremely low, but it's not zero. And once we start changing things with respect to the density of people in crowds, the risk goes from exceedingly low to maybe not so negligible.
The city has canceled all major summer events, including the Caribbean Carnival and CNE, again, due to the pandemic.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you ever have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. Those new federal guidelines around COVID restrictions are generating plenty of reaction.
The potential of fewer rules this summer and fall. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Nick Dixon. Nick, you're going to be talking to some doctors who say we need to pay more attention to airborne transmission.
Yeah, a couple of quite prominent doctors, Nathan. Dr. David Fisman and Dr. Brooks Follis are going to join us. They've penned an article looking at the spread of COVID through particles in the air, and they're particularly worried about indoor workplaces, classrooms, offices, things like that. They say if we don't take that more seriously, we could get into some real problems, and they say we need a strategy to change in order to save lives on this.
Meantime, Nick, the NDP putting forward a motion to reopen outdoor activities, and you've got a political panel to weigh in.
Yeah, Sarah Singh is the MPP, the deputy leader, in fact, of the NDPs, and she's the one who put forward this motion that's going to get voted on Monday. We're going to debate the motion tonight with a panel all from the opposition. In fact, nobody from the PCs was made available, but it's interesting because, of course, we know how many voices the science table, politicians, health boards have said, let's open up to outdoor amenities, but again, the government holding firm, it seems, until June 2nd.
Nick, thank you.
Thanks.
CP24 tonight. It airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar gained nearly a third of a cent to $82.55 U.S. American benchmark oil was up about $1.55 a barrel to close at $65.37. And the TSX Composite Index gained 231 points to close at 19,367.
Starting Monday, Delta Airlines will require all new employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Current workers do not have to get the shot, but the airline says unvaccinated employees probably won't be able to work on international flights. That's because of the countries will soon likely require proof of inoculation. American Airlines, United, and Southwest say they don't plan to require vaccination for current employees or new hires.
It was launched just last year, but now Coca-Cola Energy is being discontinued in North America. The company says it needs to be disciplined with products that don't get the traction required for further investment. It's focusing on its more traditional sodas and flavored sparkling waters. But Coca-Cola Energy will remain on shelves in other parts of the world.
Tonight, a closer look at the new goals and guidelines for a second pandemic summer.
We need to keep doing everything we can.
Canada's vaccine caveat for lifting restrictions as America unmasks. Later on CTV National News.
And a reminder, the CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight, and you can also listen to the show live on News Talk 1010.
Coming up this Saturday on Things to Know TO, lifestyle expert Richard Cazzo shares products to help us plan for a summer road trip. We learn more about the work of the Ontario Heritage Trust and how they're taking events virtual. Aretha Kalu of Haven on the Queensway tells us about their programs and services and highlights how we can help them. And Stephanie Cowell of Parachute Canada shares spring and summer safety tips for the whole family. All this coming up Saturday morning on Things to Know TO. Every night at 6, we celebrate the good going on in our community and the people who are bringing Toronto together.
The most empowering way I've ever lived.
Very inspirational.
These stories that we're telling are really about people thinking beyond themselves, making donations, spreading joy, helping relieve loneliness.
Pets give them a purpose.
Toronto Together is showing that when our community comes together,
he's happy,
something special happens.
This is how communities come together to help.
Every night on CTV News.
Coming up on CP24 tonight, Summertime Blues, reaction as some of Toronto's biggest events are canceled, and the road ahead, what the Public Health Agency of Canada needs to see before reducing restrictions. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
Now to Toronto Together. A candlelight vigil will be held this weekend in honor of COVID-19 victims in India.
The vigil, which will take place between 7 and 8 on Sunday night, was organized by a local woman.
It was so devastating and upsetting to see those images and feel so helpless. Yes, as I said, we can provide the material aid, and lots of fantastic organizations are doing it. But I wanted to do something that would help them emotionally.
People are being asked to step outside on Sunday and light a candle in support of those dealing with the virus in India. According to Johns Hopkins University, India is second only to the U.S. in total number of COVID-19 cases.
Well, this is a weekend to get outside. Slight chance of rain. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that slight chance of rain tonight. It's more of an issue for this time tomorrow. I'll step aside so you can see just how clear it looks on the satellite and radar. Great evening to head outside for a walk around the block or maybe do some grilling. It's a little bit cool still through the overnight hours outside of the GTA, but no frost advisories in effect for tonight. And then tomorrow's looking like a great looking day. Again, a 30% chance of a pop-up shower or thunder shower. And then there's your 7-day forecast. It's looking pretty dry and pretty warm. That's the weather. Michelle and Nathan, over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Lindsay. And be sure to join Zoraida Ullman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night, a wonderful weekend.
Good night.